Welcome to C2Y Podcast Discussions on Child and Youth Care. This is episode number 47, and I'm your host, Wolfgang Vachon. We're going to be making a few changes to the podcast over the next couple of months, most significantly with the name. Starting in April, the podcast will be called CYC Podcast, no longer C2Y Podcast. You will be able to find us at cycpodcast.org. Today's podcast is a do-over, hence the reason it's being posted in the middle of the month. There will be another podcast at the end of the month as well. March marks our third year of podcasting. You can think of the two episodes this month as a three-year anniversary celebration. In April of 2014, I had a wonderful conversation with Dr. Mary Stone-Hanley. Many people have listened to it, and many people have complained to both Mary and myself about how terrible the sound quality was, and I apologize for that. Mary contacted me several months ago and asked about redoing the interview. I readily agreed, and so today we're going to have another conversation based upon the same topics as the first one. Dr. Hanley is a performer, poet, educator, playwright, and artivist. She is the author of numerous articles and co-editor of a new book. For more information about Dr. Hanley, please visit Hanley Arts at marystonehanley.com. I'll also have a link from the website. Welcome back, Mary, and thank you for suggesting that we have another conversation.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here, and I'm really thankful for your understanding and reaching out. That's fantastic.
That's a pleasure. Your latest book is called Culturally Relevant Arts Education for Social Justice, A Way Out of No Way. That's quite the title. You packed a lot into there.
Yeah, it was a journey. That title was quite a journey. The publishers wanted one thing, and the editors wanted another, and so it's a combination of things.
It sounds like a full combination of many, many things. I want to talk about several things in the title, but I'd like to start with the subtitle. The phrase, making a way out of no way, has a long history in the Black community. Can you explain what the phrase means?
Well, a way out of no way, the African-American community has lived in the United States for centuries and has had to struggle with unbelievable hardships. Well, sometimes when I think about what we've managed to survive and to excel at, it's an amazing story. Anyway, and so the phrase, a way out of no way, is an expression of that journey. It's a way of thinking about when you think that things are absolutely darkest, there is a way to find a way out of that no way, that darkness. And so when we put together the book and we were thinking about the role the arts have played in the struggle of African Americans, but in many ways, in the story of all oppressed people, the arts have provided a way out of that darkness.
And how did the arts do that?
Creativity. Human beings we're hardwired to be creative. It's not, you know, there's excuse me, I've been teaching adults for many years, and I can't tell you the number of people who have said, I am not creative. I cannot draw. I cannot sing. I cannot dance. I am not creative. We are hardwired to be creative. We're born creative. And so, and that creativity is on so many levels. You know, I mean, the creativity is an individual thing. It's what we do when we get up and decide how we will wear our hair or what shoes we will put on. But it's also as big as creating culture or deciding someone created from their creative minds came up with the idea of democracy. That's a creation. That's a human creation. Social justice is a human creation. And the arts are a central aspect of developing minds, creative minds. It is probably one of the things that is most tangible and it's most readily present for human beings to take a medium, any medium, and it could be media that are as normal as paint or the body, but there are also other media. I mean, wire. That we've developed a whole system of electronic media, and all of that comes from creativity. But the human drive to understand and to express what is understood is a hardwired thing. It is as old as dirt.
If it's hardwired, why do you think you constantly come up to people who say, I'm not creative?
Because someone along the line told them that. And even the people who say they are not creative, you ask them, oh, do you like to cook? Oh, yes, I'd love to cook. Well, that's creative. How about do you, put on a record and dance around the house? That's creative. Creativity, we misunderstand what creativity is. We think it's something that special people do or special people are trained to do. And that is true. There are people who are trained and there are people who are, who have, because of their training and their natural inclination to work in a certain way with media, they exist. But everybody has the ability to be creative. I was watching television one time, which I do from time to time. I won't apologize.
There's lots of creativity on television these days.
Yes, there's a lot of garbage, but there's a lot of interesting
True enough.
Stuff. Yeah. And I was watching a show on PBS about monkeys. Not too far, from who we are. We like to pretend we're not animals, but we are indeed. We're part of the human species, are part of the animal kingdom. And these monkeys got in everything. They were so curious about, if you let them, they had people, this was someplace in the world where the temperature was, it was a warm climate. And they got in windows. And when they came in the windows, they opened drawers, they got into everything. They pulled out things, they tasted things. And when I was watching these monkeys, I realized I've seen that behavior before. I've seen that behavior in two-year-olds. Babies are two-year-olds. They are so curious. That's what they do. They drag things, they put it in their mouths, they crawl over and they touch it and they grab it. That curiosity. There it is. There's that curiosity, and that curiosity leads to creativity because we are curious, and then we want to do something with it. We want to express what we understand about it. But sometimes, as we're going along, it may be a friend who says, oh, that's a funny-looking picture. That doesn't look like your mother. Who are you talking about? Or it could be a teacher that expects you to behave in a certain way and play a note or read a book even in a certain way, and you begin to think that, well, maybe I was wrong, and that's where the kernel starts. Maybe I was wrong, and so there's a lot of ways to lose your sense of your sense of creativeness, but there is no way to lose your creativity unless you become so ill that your mind escapes you. But as long as you are up and able, you are a creative force in the world. It's how we transform our world, Because people are not like other animals. We don't have fur. We don't have long claws. What we have is a creative mind, an imaginative mind, and that's how we survive. So creativity is also a survival mechanism, and it's is absolutely essential for our survival on the planet. And so if you look around you, you know, you have an apartment, you have a building, you have a telephone, you have, you know, you have a clothes. All of these things were developed out of human creativity to take the resources of the world and to transform it in a way that we can survive. Now, that has become problematic.
Indeed. The show isn't problems. About the yes. problems with our, but indeed, quite problematic. You mentioned teachers, and you mentioned transformation, you mentioned creativity, and you've mentioned the journey, particularly of Black people, African Americans in particular, you were speaking of. Why do you think it is important to transform the world? let me frame this a little bit, all right, Mary?
Okay.
So what I mean by that is I've met many teachers who say, look, my job is to teach math. Mm-hmm. I've met many artists who say, you know, ballet is about making beautiful images with my body. I've met painters who say, I want to paint pictures. My job as a teacher or as an artist is not to transform the world. It's not to address issues of social injustice. Why do you think artists and teachers and those who work with children and youth have a responsibility to transform the world?
Well, you know, there's a couple of levels for that. One thing is, if you teach, you transform. Whether you can transform it for ill or for good. You can, but just the act of teaching is transformation. And so, in terms of teaching, wouldn't it seem to be preferable to teach in a way that helps children be agents in the world, helps children find their power and help them to address issues that affect them? It's your teaching of math. If you're teaching just numbers, you're really not helping them, or not helping them as fully as possible. If you teach them to apply the math, then you're helping them to move in the world. And that in itself is transformation. But one step beyond that is helping them, and it may not be the math teacher, it may be the history teacher, to help them understand what the world is about. And then you can apply that math in the world that is. Do you understand my trajectory
mm-hmm.
there?
Mm-hmm, indeed.
Okay. So it is, you know, there is no act that you do as an educator that is not political. Even silence is political, or absence is political.
Now, this is when you say this, I know there's listeners right now who are thinking, oh, give me a break.
But by political, I don't mean, you know, in the States, I don't mean Republican and Democrat. That's not what I mean by political. I mean, political is an issue of power. Who has it? Who doesn't have it? And why not? I mean, everything. And so if you're in a classroom, there's a politics of a classroom. A lot of beginning teachers think they have all the power, until they get in a classroom and find out the children have as much power as the teacher. And that is a political discussion that has to happen between teacher and student. A lot of beginning teachers are really surprised at that fact.
Mm-hmm.
They think they're the sage. But, okay, but the other piece is that children come to school from someplace and they leave school to go someplace. And if you are a teacher that cares about the students who come into your room, who care more, if you're teaching people, so sometimes people like to say, I teach math. You're not teaching math, you're teaching students. You're teaching math to students. And so it's not as simple as I'm only teaching this. You can, you know, if you want to teach math, you go talk to the wall, but you got people in front of you, and you have to deal with who they are, where they come from, and how they can apply what it is that you're giving them. As for artists, art by its very essence also is transformative. If I look at a painting and derive some meaning from it, I am transformed. If I go to a play and we discuss it afterwards, I am transformed. So an artist who thinks they are not involved with transformation, they really don't know what they're up to if they think that all they're doing. Artists who teach, the ballet dancer, the ballet teacher, yes, you are teaching ballet. And by that very act, you are transforming a life. You are teaching them to be creative. You are enhancing their creativity. You are giving them tools and skills to be creative, to express themselves through an art form. That in itself is transformative. On top of that is as an artist, well, there's a whole lot of issues of social class and race, et cetera, in ballet.
Indeed.
Maybe we should have started with another article.
I realized I'm actually just reading an article about a ballet director right now in Toronto, so it was on my head because of analyzing and thinking about this particular artist, but I agree. Perhaps we should have picked another art form.
Yeah. Music.
Well, you know, the main title, or the beginning title of your book is Culturally Relevant Arts Education. And, you know, the ballet is so heavily located within particular cultural understanding and norms and class and mm-hmm. race, and all of that stuff is embedded in ballet.
And some ballet, because there are African American and Latino ballet groups.
Absolutely.
You know, who use ballet to express culture. So that's changing. Shall we knock on some wood here? And that in itself is a political act.
And that comes back to your idea of culturally relevant arts.
Right.
And so the teacher, in whatever medium, how do we be explicitly culturally relevant in our arts education?
Okay, well, that word explicitly is an important piece of it. Because if you think about ballet, you can bet your bottom dollar that ballet is a culturally relevant art form.
Mm-hmm.
To Europeans who've had that art form in their culture for a very long time. It sprang from that culture and is a part of that culture and expresses that culture. And so, once again, everything is political, even ballet. But the culturally relevant art education project is explicit. And that's different than what I was just mentioning, and it doesn't exclude, you know, teaching Brahms in music class, or there are all kinds of ways to teach. That's what I guess I'm getting to. There are all kinds of ways to teach the arts, and someone who teaches, paintings from Salvador Dali or something. Those are all valid, you know. They all are transformative. Any kind of way that you teach art, they transform the artist, they transform the learner, they transform the culture. culturally relevant arts education has a purpose. It's a specific kind of way of teaching the arts. It has a purpose of helping students, particularly students on the margin, but not only them, because every student, regardless of their background, should be aware of difference and should respect difference and embrace difference. And so when I'm talking about culturally relevant, I'm not, and education, most of the time when you hear that term, you think of race. But I'm talking about culturally relevant. I'm talking about relevant to the culture of the students on one hand, but also introducing to them across the board a diversity of cultures that will enable them to be stronger and more critically thoughtful in a global, multicultural world, and using the arts to do that.
Why is it important for us? You know, sometimes I struggle when I work with young people. And yesterday I was teaching a class, and we were talking about oppression in class and what is oppression. And, you know, I've met young people of color, you know, young South Asian or black youth who say, I've never experienced racism, and I don't think it's my place as a white man to say, yes, you have experienced racism. And so I come into this tension in these moments about, is it my responsibility or duty or obligation to, you know, you've written about Paulo Freire's work and you know, conscientization, politicization of people. Is it my responsibility to try to do that in those moments as someone who works with children and youth?
Well, yes, because you're a human being and you are aware of the world. That the world is not an easy place to go. I mean, it is challenging. And, you know, and you're aware of the challenges that these kids, even if they said they've never met it, you can bank on it that they will, somewhere along the line. But even that, even if they've said they've never seen it before, somebody has. I bet if they ask their parents, they've seen it. Or if they've asked a friend down the block, they've seen it. Or someone has. And not only that, they will move into the future. And they will hear about somebody on the other side of the globe, some girl on the other side of the globe who is denied education because of her gender, for example, or some boy in Haiti who has lost everything but has no who is involved in a liberation struggle in Haiti. So children, as they grow, we want them to be citizens of the world. You know, we want them to be able to make sense of the world. And so those of us who have, and you are only one of the people who may help them to see that. They will meet other people who will help them to see it. So it's not like the responsibility is all on your shoulders at this particular time forevermore. It is your responsibility to get them to ignite their curiosity, to help them to start asking questions. Even if, you know, so if they so they say, well, I've never seen racism, then you can ask them, why do you think that is? If you think that's true of everybody, who is, if it's an Asian, if it's a Chinese Canadian person, do you think that's true of all Chinese Canadians? How about your parents? Have they ever seen it? That's very interesting. You know, you're going to say, really? You've never seen it? Well, I have. Let me tell you about the time I saw it, and from my perspective, how I felt when I saw it. So, you know, you don't have to tell them, no, yes, you did see it. You know, you could simply ask them questions or give them some idea of your experience or experience of people you know, so that they begin to question, what seems to be an inflexible box that they're in. You need to make cracks in the geology of what they're thinking.
You've spent a career making those cracks. You know, there's a quote that you've used, which I found quite evocative. You know, so you've worked with young Black children doing theater, and you've said that the work that you've done, you've used the arts to be creative and critical change agents who can challenge demeaning perceptions and practices. So if these young Black children can be creative and critical change agents who challenge demeaning perceptions and practices, can you give us some examples of how you've done that in the arts?
Well, most of what I've been working in is theater with young people, and there are a number of different ways that, I mean, theater has such ample opportunities for exploration and presentation and expression. I worked with a group of middle school students for about 7 years, I believe that program was on, and I collected their stories and wrote plays for them, but about their experience and about their lives, and I take the plays, I'd write drafts and take the drafts to them, and then they would critique the drafts and say whether or not it was completely their story, and then I'd take it back and write it, and so we went back and forth until it was a story that they recognized and wanted to express to the world. And then they would perform this and tour it to schools and afterward have discussions about the issues, and we covered all kinds of issues from police brutality to gangs to drugs to love and sex, and there were all kinds of things that we covered. And so with any art form, when they can express themselves in a certain way. I was involved in helping them to express themselves. Let me make that clear. I was the person who put it down on paper, but it was them telling me. And so that was one way. And then on the other level was to train their bodies and their speech so that they were able to express it as an actor, and then afterwards express it as a person who was interested in the communities and in transforming the communities. You know, what I learned with these middle school students is that all of them, every single one of them, and I don't remember how many I worked with, it was over 100, it was quite a few of them, every single one of them wanted to work in their community, wanted to change their community. They looked around and saw things that they did not like, and they wanted to do something about it. And so that's a youthful impulse. It happens a lot with young people. And it's important to feed into that impulse, because one thing is that for educators to understand that impulse is there and that it can be arrived at through the arts, it then begets, I mean, imagine doing history through the arts with that impulse to challenge them, how can you transform your community understanding history and using the arts to do that. That's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about culturally relevant arts education. It integrates not only the arts, but it integrates the psychology of children, educational psychology. It integrates multicultural education, which includes things like the content that they study. It includes the ideas. Who has that? It's the epistemological question of who makes meaning, and what does that have to do with you? Who has the power to make meaning? So if they show nothing but Black thugs on television, who has that power? And what knowledge? How does that knowledge affect you, and how does the knowledge that you can transform that affect you? And so it's a fairly complex idea of how to teach students over and beyond just a subject. It's much more complex.
I think you really help us to unpack that complexity, you know, the idea of understanding the numbers so that you can understand the world, using theater as a way to explore the possibilities that can happen in the world.
Exactly. And theater is theater above all art forms, you know, and I guess I'm a little biased because I've been doing theater for long, but theater is the one art form in which all other art forms are involved. And so it is a fascinating art form. I mean, you know, you have visual arts in theater, you have dance in theater, you have music in theater, you have, you know, a building, you have to do math in theater, you have to you do visual arts in theater, dance in theater, and so it is an art form that incorporates all the other art forms, and so it's just rich in possibilities with what can be done. For example, if you're doing theater and you have kids who want to do some work around the sets, there is such a need for understanding mathematics to build a set, to understand the architecture in your community and that you've learned from building a set for this particular play. I mean, there's the theater. And like I say, I'm biased. Theater is just rich.
Yeah, I'm biased too. My background's theater as well, so I absolutely agree with you that there's, you know, everything's wrapped up in theater.
All the world's a stage.
Huh? All the world's a stage, and it's a beautiful metaphor for, you know, different capacities and skills, and, you know, we all bring what we are to you know, and it's not about just, you know, the actor on stage or just the director or just the set designer or just the lighting designer. It's about how do we come together as a community. And, yes, you know, it's one of the things I so adore about theater is it's, you know, I often say everything I've learned about working with children and youth, I learned in creating theater.
Yes. And that is another really wonderful thing about theater and working with youth is you build a community. These kids, I've seen them, I mean, they've grown up, you know, they've gone into high school and stuff, and they still miss each other. They still talk about the community that they have. So you're not only developing them as individuals, you're developing their ability to work as a group, to be a team, to develop skills for collaboration. These are skills that they will need that are over and above the art form. These are, you know, the ones that are that they will need in life, no matter what they do. How to collaborate, how to listen. Never mind. That's
indeed. I agree completely. Dr. Mary Stone Hanley, I want to thank you for coming back. I want to thank you for having this conversation again. We went into a related but completely new direction, and hopefully the sound quality will be such that everybody can hear it and understand it this time. I think we're going to be okay.
Oh, good.
But I want to thank you for all the work that you do and you continue to do, and the writing and the thinking. Your writing has really helped me understand some of what I do in my own theater practice and working with children and youth and my responsibilities as an educator. And so I find that really valuable. I encourage everybody who works either as a teacher or as an artist or who's interested in working with children and youth to pick up your latest book, Culturally Relevant Arts Education. Yes, I think it's well worth. And I'm going to I'll put the cover of the book on the website so people can see it. So when they're in the bookstore, they'll be able to find it.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much. And yes, something else you want to add?
No, I was going to say thank you. I have enjoyed the conversation. I almost get up out of my seat. I am so excited about the arts and creativity with kids and with human beings all together. So it's just an opportunity to just have a wonderful, wonderful discussion on this sunny, freezing cold day.
Indeed. And I can relate to the impulse to get up and the impulse to move. I find it quite restrictive to sit and have this conversation. Thank you and stay well, Mary.
You too.
This concludes this month's episode of C2Y Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher and visit us at c2ypodcast.org.